with the latest from the world of technology. This is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenwick.
I quite like the number of apps that are already available.
Tech Guide.
The iPad 2 still beats just about everything on the market. The new iPad has just kicked away even further.
Tech Guide.
I quite enjoyed using it. Great design. The operating system worked hand in hand with the hardware as well.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is obviously a hot-selling device.
Tech Guide.
You know, we want that to be light. We want that to be portable. And this one's very fast with i7 and i5 processors.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenwick.
Tech Guide, episode 57. Hello and welcome. Thanks for listening and thanks for downloading. It's great to have your company once more. And for those listening for the first time, we're glad you made it. My name is Stephen Fenwick and I'm the editor of techguide.com.au. On this week's show, we're going to kick it off with the Federal Parliament's recommendations for their IT pricing inquiry. Next, we're going to turn to smartphones and the battle between Samsung and Apple that's really hotting up, and the news of Apple's rumored entry-level iPhone. In the Tech Guide reviews, we're going to look at an amazing new technology called Leap Motion, which gives users an all-new way to interact with your computer. Next up, we'll check out Samsung's latest Series 8 Smart TV, and we'll also look at the SanDisk new memory products. And we'll wrap it up, as usual, with the Tech Guide Help Desk. And it's all brought to you by our proud sponsors, Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi products. A lot to talk about right here on Tech Guide. Well, some interesting news coming out of Federal Parliament today around the IT pricing inquiry. And this followed a Senate inquiry where Apple and Microsoft and Adobe were called before a committee in Canberra and asked about pricing comparisons and how Australians pay a lot more in many cases for products here in Australia, whether they're actual hardware or digital content. And the results of that inquiry and that Senate hearing have been released now in some recommendations by in Federal Parliament today. And the recommendations are all around trying to give Australians a more fair go. I think it's good to see the government's into bat for Australian customers here, trying to get us on a level playing field when it comes to pricing for hardware and digital content. Now, we've seen in the past many occurrences where Australians pay way over the odds for certain products. And I'm not talking hundreds of dollars. In some cases, I'm talking thousands of dollars for the exact same product in other parts of the world. So it's good news to hear that Australia, the government, has our best interests at heart as consumers. Now, we want to be competitive with the rest of the world, and we want to have access to the same products as the rest of the world. And these recommendations, there were around 10 of them, I think, and they reflect some moves that we encourage to give Aussies a fairer bite of the content pie, as well as fairer pricing on hardware. And the way they're going to go about that is partly by, and this was one of the recommendations, removing parallel import restrictions under copyright laws. In other words, giving Australians access to cheaper goods, whether they're here or overseas, mainly overseas, of course. Also look at the recommendation, looked at reforming copyright laws to give protection to consumers to get around what we call geo-blocks. There's a lot of content available in the US, for example, that isn't available here in Australia. Now, there are ways around this. You can do things, browser plugins and things like that, but it just makes it harder for the consumer. These recommendations suggest that those geo-blocks, we get around those geo-blocks and allow that content to be viewed here in Australia. The recommendation also looked at educating consumers about how, just on those geo-blocks, how to get around the geo-blocks and the tools that are available to them and whether it's fair to do so. One of the problems with us with our content is that there are rights holders that want to only show the content in certain parts of the world at certain times. There's deals done around the world that can just turn into a hot mess for a lot of people. Now, a good example of that would be popular shows that everyone knows when they're airing. Game of Thrones, all these big shows that come out that people want to see straight away. Not everyone has the same access to Foxtel. We've all got access to the internet. And there are many people willing to pay for this content, want to pay for this content. But when it's geo-blocked and only allowed to be shown in certain places first, there was an example here where Foxtel was showing the express screenings of episodes of Game of Thrones. And iTunes, I think, were allowing the same access to a couple of hours later, people could buy the episodes. Well, Foxtel made a complaint. It was taken off iTunes. And now people who aren't Foxtel customers were forced to do what they could to get hold of the show. And in many cases, it resulted in them downloading it illegally. Now, when the first move by a customer is to view it legally, to pay for this content, and they're not allowed to do so, then these are the sort of things that these recommendations are hopefully going to address. Now, in terms of pricing on hardware, there were moves also for the government to really examine how Australian consumers are treated and giving them access to fair pricing, whether it's here in our country or importing it from overseas at a fairer price. Why shouldn't our consumers be able to buy a product overseas if it's going to be hundreds, if not thousands of dollars cheaper than if it was bought here in Australia? Now, I should stress that these are only recommendations. There's no mandate here to change laws or anything like that. You've got to remember there's a federal election looming in the next few months. And if there is a change of government, which is likely, then these recommendations could not be sort of made a priority by the new government. So, again, nothing is set in stone, but good to see that the government's taken some action at least to give all Aussies a fair go. Australian consumers should have the same rights as any consumers anywhere in the world, and if we should be entitled to pay a fair price for the same digital content, the same products that other people around the world should. I think the days of price gouging should well and truly be over, and good on the federal government for making these recommendations. If you want to read them all in full, you can find them at techguide.com.au.
This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenech.
Now, the smartphone battle has always been a pretty intense battle between Samsung and Apple. Samsung have just announced actually record profits for the second quarter of 2013. They made $5.2 billion just in smartphones and have for the first time overtaken Apple as the most profitable mobile phone manufacturer. Apple actually recorded a three-year low. They dropped to their lowest market share for 3 years. They slumped to 13.1%, as I mentioned, the lowest share for 3 years. And now Samsung, of course, on the back of their successful Galaxy S4 launch, has really seen a resurgence. In fact, Samsung accounted for 27.7% of all smartphone sales in the second quarter. And their market share is now sitting at 30.4%, which easily puts them out at number one, number two being Apple on 13.1%, as I mentioned. So they've got quite a lead in the smartphone stakes. But the problem with the Apple in the past were happy to offer more expensive phones that people were willing to pay for, and that's what kept their profits high. Where they missed out, though, was in the cheaper phone market, where people were looking, they weren't wanting to pay $799, which is the lowest price for an iPhone. They wanted something cheaper, more affordable, and Apple really didn't have an alternative in this space. But what there was a huge amount of Android devices, many of them also Samsung products, that were affordable. Entry-level devices. Now, here is where Apple's missed out, and if you believe the rumors, and we're going to talk about this in the next segment, so hang on, we're going to talk more about the iPhone entry-level product. There's some leaked images and some facts we've found out about that product. But this kind of supports those rumors that Apple are actually doing this. Apple's rumored to be releasing the iPhone 5 will look the same. It'll be the iPhone 5S, but the other rumor was around an entry-level device, which, as I said, we're going to talk about in the next segment. But this is where Apple can then bring themselves back in the game, grow that market share, grab that market they're missing out on, that entry-level market. Young teenagers, I know where people start high school, young boys and girls starting high school wanting to have their first phone. And, of course, a lot of them want iPhones, but not all of them can afford $799. So they make do with an Android device that's only a couple of $100. And this is why Samsung has seen a huge surge, why their profits are up, why Apple has slumped. This, I think, we can pinpoint to be the reason. The battle is going to continue well into the future. Samsung have got the lead at the moment. Ball's in Apple's court, though. We're expecting an iPhone 5 release in the next month or so. When that happens, we don't know exactly when that's going to happen, but I think the sooner the better. And let's hope that that there's a lot more choice out there for the customers and more. The battle will continue between these two major companies. If you want to read about and see image of the rumored entry level device from Apple, the iPhone 5, you can read that at techguide.com.au. Well, as promised, the segment about smartphones continues, and the focus on this part of the show will be on the entry-level iPhone that I discussed previously. Now, there has been some images that have been leaked online showing what is alleged to be leaked images of the new entry-level iPhone packaging. Now, it's a very revealing image because not only does it show the shape of the packaging, it also reveals the name of the product. On the side, and if you want to get over to techguide.com.au, I've actually the picture comes from WeiPhone, a Chinese website. And in this image are these white packages. And on the side, very clearly, it says the iPhone 5C. Now, C is thought to stand for color, because the rumors are that the iPhone 5, the entry-level iPhone 5, will have a plastic rear casing and will be offered in the same style as the iPod Touch fifth generation in a number of colors. Now, if you look at the image that has been leaked, you'll see that the packaging is only for the back of the case. The front of the case is where we suspect will be a clear cover showing the color of the iPhone 5C inside. Now, there's rumored to be 4, 5, 6 colors. I've heard all the different rumors, but there will be a number of colors to attract that youth market, to capture that low entry level device, that market. And will obviously the colors will put it in line with the iPod Touch, which is very popular with younger users. But the iPhone 5C would be viewed as an entry level device, a first phone for a lot of people. And having an iPhone 5 that's affordable, and we're hearing that it's going to be the same screen size as the normal iPhone 5, which is 4 inches. It will also run the latest operating system. What may change is that the processor may be slightly slower. There may not be as much memory in the entry-level iPhone 5. The camera may not be as good as the new iPhone 5. The new iPhone 5S, we suspect, is going to have a 13-megapixel camera. The iPhone 5S may also have 802.11ac, the faster Wi-Fi standard. So the iPhone 5S may only have 8-megapixel camera, may not have the 802.11ac. It'll have some features that will separate it from the premium product. If you had all the same features in the entry-level product, people are going to buy the entry-level product because it's cheaper. We don't know whether it's going to be offered as an outright purchase only. It may also be offered on plans, on cheaper plans. I suspect it'll be offered as an outright purchase, as all their phones are here in Australia, and it'll give you also the option of taking it out on a plan, but albeit a much cheaper plan, being an entry-level product. you want to check out that photo, you can do it. It's from WeiPhone. It's a Chinese website that obviously has a photo taken in one of the factories. It is an alleged leaked image, I'm saying. I'm not saying that it is actually the image, but it does give us a lot of clues and really strengthen some of the rumors around this entry-level iPhone. This is Tech Guide.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
The Tech Guide podcast is proudly brought to you by Netgear. Did you want to experience the fastest Wi-Fi ever in your home? Well, you can. You can go faster and further with Netgear, Australia's number one brand of Wi-Fi gear in your home. You can supercharge your home wireless network with Netgear's wireless AC products. I mentioned in the previous segment that the new iPhone will likely have the 802.11ac standard. Well, if it does, and if you have this new wireless AC product, you can have up to 3 times faster Wi-Fi connection. There's already 802.11ac in Apple's latest MacBook Air. There's also in the HTC One and in the Samsung Galaxy S4. So companies are moving ahead with the products adopting this very latest wireless standard. And as I said, delivers next generation gigabit Wi-Fi up to 3 times faster than your existing Wi-Fi. It's NBN ready and great for streaming HD video. Netgear's family of 802.11ac products provide increased Wi-Fi coverage, which means you can now use your mobile devices like tablets and smartphones in every corner of your home. It forms direct beam technology, so it knows exactly in your home where the device is. And rather than trying to go through walls and send out a blanket signal, it can pinpoint where the device is on your network and create that faster connection. The Netgear Genie app also makes it easy to install and lets you view and play all of your digital photos, movies, and music on your smartphone, tablet, PC, or smart TV. If you want to find out more, you can head over to netgear.com.au/fastest Wi-Fi.
Tech Guide. Now, a Tech Guide review with Stephen Fenwick.
The product I'm about to talk about is probably one of the most impressive little devices I've seen in quite a while. Now, that's a pretty big statement considering the number of products that I've reviewed in my many years as a technology writer. But I've got to say, the Leap Motion is an exciting new device that gives you an all-new way to interact with your desktop or laptop computer. Now, if any of you have ever seen that movie with Tom Cruise called Minority Report, directed by Steven Spielberg a few years ago now, but there's a famous scene where Tom Cruise is in front of a large monitor and controlling the device, the screen, with hand movements. It looked pretty futuristic back then, but I've got to say Leap Motion has now made that possible on your existing PC or Mac. Now, the device itself is connected by USB. It's very small. In my story, I've described it as being slightly bigger than a pack of chewing gum. So it's about 8 centimeters wide, just over a centimeter thick, and the top surface is a sensor that creates the ability to create an interactive 3D space in front of your computer. I've done a video, recorded it, and embedded it on my story on Tech Guide. And it lets your hands and fingers control whatever you want to do. Now, there are a lot of apps already available. It's only just hit stores. Leap Motion has been in pre-order for quite a while. Products have already shipped. I got one of the first ones here in Australia to review, and it is an amazing device. So imagine using your hand and your finger instead of the keyboard, instead of the mouse, instead of a pen, and instead of a controller. So you think of the apps, and there's more than 75 already at launch. You install, whether you're using a PC or Mac, you install the software that runs, it's called Airspace, and it is your portal to your apps, also a shortcut to the store, because there are a lot of free apps. There are a lot of apps that you pay for, a few dollars, and there are apps that are for PC only, for Mac only, and there are a lot of them that are for both. Now, the categories, it's a no-brainer. There's a lot of games. You Cut the Rope is one of the games where the object of the game is to cut the ropes, get the coin into the monster's mouth at the bottom of the screen, whether you need to swing it through, collect the gold coins on the way past, but now you don't even need a mouse. You use a slashing action with your finger to cut the various ropes to get that object down the screen. It's, as I said, it's 8 centimeters wide, 1.27 centimeters tall, connected by USB, and it is. It really needs to be seen to be believed. Now, games are a natural fit for this, but that's not to say it can't be used for other things like productivity apps, creativity apps, music apps. There's more than 26,000 developers already hard at work creating apps that will work with the Leap Motion controller. It, as I said, works for desktop and laptop. Just needs to be positioned in front of your computer. Clear a little bit of space. You can have it, say, between your keyboard and the screen if you wanted to. And it is surprisingly accurate. The video that I've put on Tech Guide is actually the orientation video. When you first unpack the Leap Motion out of the box, you connect it to the USB, you register the device, you download the software, and that is the orientation that you need to go through just to give you an idea of its capabilities. And it can detect it for even the slightest movement. You can write on the screen just in midair. I wrote my name on the screen, as you'll see in the video. And it also shows you what it sees, your hands in front of the sensor come up on the screen. It's like it's an X-ray of your hand. It shows you what it sees in front of the computer, and that's 10 fingers, 5 on each hand moving around. Each finger, the slightest movement is picked up. It is really remarkable technology. So you can just imagine what developers are working on. There's even an application called Better Touch Tool that lets you integrate the Leap Motion as part of the operating system. I use a Mac, and there is the Mac version that lets you set gestures that they will open certain apps. So you might make a single finger clockwise circle to open up your calendar, for example. You might make an anti-clockwise circle to open up your browser. You may do two fingers left to open another app, and you know, these are sort of controls that it gives you for using your computer. There was one app there called Cyber Science 3D Motion, and it allows you to identify different parts of a skull, take the skull apart, enlarge it, reduce it, and then put it back together again. There's also a game, it's kind of like Jenga, you know, where you got to take the blocks out without the tower falling. You can do that virtually with the Leap Motion device. Very interesting stuff. Available for $79.99, but for Australians that works out with express shipping to be around $110. I've put a link to their website as well as several pictures of the device and, of course, my demo video, which is only a couple of minutes long but well worth checking out just to appreciate the sensitivity and the options that this device is going to offer. You can read that at techguide.com.au. Okay, let's talk TVs, and I have reviewed the Samsung 55-inch Series 8 F8000 Smart TV. Boy, that's a mouthful, but I've got to say, it is a beautiful television. Samsung's latest flagship Smart TV, the hero product of the lineup, I've called it. Now, this TV combines a lot of things. It's got great design, it's got great connectivity, excellent picture quality, and the interaction. You've got gesture control, voice control, and the new S recommendations, which I'll get to in a moment. But let's start with the design. The design is pretty slick. Now, the frame around the TV wouldn't be half a centimeter around the picture. So all you're virtually seeing is the picture. And the picture quality, while I'm at it, is excellent. Great contrast, a lot of technology behind the screen, really bringing the picture quality. There's micro dimming to help enhance the contrast. Color reproduction is really natural. It is not too oversaturated. It's got a very nice balance. It's got a great refresh rate too. I've watched a lot of sport on this TV, hardly any motion judder. So big ticks in that department. But on the design side, there was one little thing that we found very interesting. The stand itself, it's got an arc stand that the ends of the stand are 1.2 meters apart. And what that means is that you need a surface at least 1.2 metres wide to hold this thing. Now, if you were thinking of resting this on a little table, it's not going to work. You need a table that's at least 1.2 metres wide. Now, I know a lot of people, and I'm one of them, I had to put a plank across my regular-sized entertainment unit to be able to fit the TV on that unit. So if you're thinking of buying this product, do some measurements at home. If you want to wall mount it, then you're around that problem. But if you want to put it on an entertainment unit, it needs to be wide enough. And I'm talking 1.2 meters end to end of the stand. If you can't support that, the TV is just going to tip forward and you're going to have a very expensive breakage on your hands. But that aside, I've got to say, this is a feature-packed device. Let's talk about voice control. Now, it comes with two remote controls. One of the remote controls has a microphone. You press the voice button and you can talk to the TV, ask to put channel up, channel down, volume up, volume down, sound on and off. You can even call up the smart hub. A lot of commands literally that you can speak. You can talk and order this TV to do all of those things. But another part of the voice is S recommendations. Now, this is where the smarts of the TV come into play. It takes note of what you like. You can give a thumbs up to some programs that you enjoy. But you can ask the TV questions. You can ask for recommendations. You can say, well, I feel like watching an action movie. Show me action movies. And it'll give you the options on the bottom of the screen. You can say, show me movies starring Tom Cruise or Clint Eastwood. And it will find those movies and whether they're on free-to-air, whether they're on now, whether they're on in a few days, whether they're on catch-up TV. It will give you these options. And if you want to record one of them, it gives you that option as well. So it doesn't. You're not locked into specific phrases, exact phrases, like you were on the last TV. You can just simply ask it questions and it will work out some key phrases, key words to understand what you're saying and come up with an answer. This is part of the work done with Macquarie University in their natural language department. They've got natural language processing happening and it'll recognize, of course, our Australian accents and give some intelligent responses. Now, in terms of gesture control, pretty much like last year's TV, you wave your hand in the air, volume and channel controls appear on either side of the screen. You can also mouse up. So once you wave your hand in front of the TV, a little hand appears on the screen to reflect the movement of your hand. That is detected through the camera that pops out of the top edge of the screen. And you can also use that camera for face recognition as well. So control there is pretty good, although the remote control is always there as well. If you want to stick to old school, change the channel with the remote control, you can still do that. In terms of connectivity, the Smart Hub is a great way to access content, great way to access apps, catch up TV, YouTube, browse the web. The smaller remote control, which I call the smart remote control, has actually a trackpad on it. So if you're browsing a website or just the interface, you can run your finger across that trackpad in the same way you would the trackpad on your laptop. So it really gives you greater control, easy to access all of those features. It's a full HD LED TV. I mentioned the micro dimming, and that adjusts the picture quality on the fly. It's also a 3D TV and does 2D to 3D conversion. The glasses are really light. They're great development from, I remember as recently as 2-3 years ago, the glasses were pretty bulky. It was an effort to wear them. Now you'll hardly know they're on your head. The Samsung TV, it's $4,199. We reviewed the 55-inch TV, but it is available in other sizes. It's available in not only 55, 60, 65, and 75 inches. The 55-inch is $4,199. And the beauty of this TV as well is that that's a serious investment, but it also is also compatible with the Evolution Kit. Now, the Evolution Kit is a small device that plugs into the back of the TV, worth a couple of $100s. And what it does, it upgrades the TV software and has the latest processor on board that kit. So it becomes then the master processor of the TV after it has upgraded the latest software. So you can do that every year for the next 5 years, if you like, and keep your TV up to date with the very latest from the company. So you make that investment, at least you know you've future-proofed it with that Evolution Kit. But if you can, you want to read my full review, I've written it at techguide.com.au. It's given some pricing, given my star rating. I won't give that away. You've got to go to the site to look at that. But in terms of Samsung, they've created what I think is probably their best ever TV. It's a very well-rounded product, combines great design, great technology, lots of excellent features, and something that you'll enjoy for many years to come. We're going to change gears once more here and talk about memory cards. And we sat down with SanDisk last week, which is the leading flash memory company in the world. Not only do they make flash cards, they also make SSD memory for many different companies, Acer, Asus. A lot of those companies have SanDisk flash drives on under the hood. But the cards we were looking at, there was a memory card, a micro SD card, which is the very latest and greatest extreme card, the SDXC card. People are wondering and thinking, well, why does my memory card need to be fast? Well, why does it need to be extreme? Well, you think about how we use our smartphones, our devices now. There's 4G products. There's got great cameras on board. We're shooting HD video, sharing things, and the card has to be able to keep up with that operation. And it does that with high read speeds and high write speeds. So when it's writing, if you're taking burst mode on your smartphone and needs to take 10 photos in a half a second, the memory card can handle that data being written to the card while you're doing it. If it doesn't, you're going to miss every second frame. You're going to miss the moment. So hence the reason why not all cards are the same. And the new SanDisk Extreme MicroSD XC card is case in point. Now, if you've got digital SLR cameras, we've got full HD video cameras, even 4K cameras we're looking at now. You got a digital SLR, it can shoot images, 20 megapixel images, which is greater than 4K resolution. But you want a card that can keep up with that. And the beauty of having flash memory, and SanDisk demonstrated this really well, it's waterproof. You can drop it in a glass of water. You can go through all kinds of things with it. You're not going to lose your data because there's no moving parts. It's flash memory. Now, what SanDisk also has unveiled was the Ultra USB 3.0 flash drive. USB 3.0 is faster, way faster than USB 2. And the USB flash drive has a slider mechanism, so it's available in 16 all the way up to 64 gig capacities, as is the micro SD card I failed to mention, available in 16 memory all the way to 64. The micro SD card starts at $69 all the way up to $249 for a 64 gig micro SD card. And this micro SD card is the size of my fingernail on my pinky finger. That's how small it is, and yet it's still 64 gig, which is very, very impressive. The Ultra USB flash drives start at $29.95. There's a slide mechanism, so the USB connection can slide back into place, can be protected, makes the product a little bit smaller. You can carry around on your keyring. But it too has very fast transfer file rates, about up to 80 meg per second. With the micro SD card, it has read speeds of 80 megabytes per second, I should say, and write speeds of up to 50 megabytes per second to capture all those high quality images, full HD video, burst mode, things like that. But SanDisk, they're a real leader in memory technology. And just remember, if you've got the latest and greatest device, you also want the latest and greatest memory card to make you use, to give you full use of that product. If you want to read more about that and see the images of the SanDisk range, you can do that at techguide.com.au.
Now, answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
Now, there's one question I get asked a fair bit, and it's when people, they panic a little bit when they got their iPhone and they can't turn it on. It's I don't know if it blinks out and the home button does nothing, the sleep button does nothing, the lock key, pressing and holding it, nothing's happening. I get a lot of frantic phone calls, frantic emails. People on the radio have even asked me this question. My iPhone's dead. What's happened to it? I can't start the iPhone. My answer to them is a very simple one. You can reboot the phone. Now, if it's not responsive, the home button's not doing anything, the lock key's not doing anything, then you need to reboot the device. And how you do that is by holding those two buttons that I just mentioned down at once, the home key and the lock key. If your phone is dead, not responsive, hold down the home key, hold down the lock key, hold both down for about 10 seconds until you see that Apple logo appear on the screen. And all the responses I've had to 99.9% of people who ask me, who said, well, my phone's not working, what do I do? They've all come back and said, thank you, it works. So if you need to reboot your device, your iPhone, hold down the home key, hold down the lock key. Now, another little tip for you while we're on iPhones, a lot of people, we love taking photos with their iPhones. I think their latest campaigns show that there are probably more photos taken on an iPhone than any other device in the world. So taking those images, we're doing it every day and plenty of them each day. So, but though it's a lot of people don't realize though, it's sometimes very hard to touch that capture key on the screen. You know, you might be trying to line up your photo, then trying to touch the touch screen. It can be a little bit difficult. But what a lot of people don't realize, and I try to point this out to as many people as possible, and most people don't realize this, the volume up key in camera mode is also the shutter key. So you can hold the phone naturally. You can have the volume keys on top of the device. You can be using the screen as the viewfinder. You press the volume plus key, the volume up key, and it will activate the shutter. So you've taken your photo like you would a normal camera. Now, even if you're wearing headphones, the Apple headphones with the inline remote on the cord, by pressing the middle button, the volume up button, I should say, on that inline remote control, it too will trigger the shutter. So you don't even need to be touching the phone if you've got your headphones attached to capture your image. Food for thought there, people. It's going to make it a lot easier to take your photos rather than having to try to get that touch, that button, and you know, your photo might be affected by you trying to in your efforts to hit that on-screen capture button. Volume plus equals shutter. You're listening to Tech Guide. And that's a wrap for another week. You can read about all we've talked about on this episode on our website, techguide.com.au. And we also love to hear your feedback. You can get in touch at info@techguide.com.au. Please also send us your help desk questions. Our Tech Guide forum is a great place to get your questions answered and for you to help other people with their problems if you wish to do so. Special thanks to our sponsors, Netgear, the brand you can trust for all your Wi-Fi needs. If you want to stay connected, the answer is Netgear. Well, thanks for listening. It's been great to have your company. We look forward to catching up with you again next week. So in the meantime, stay safe, stay connected.